Welcome to Nest in Style, where we bring you the latest trends for your home and garden combined with a twist of the past. It's June, everybody, and we're back. Teresa and I are back for another exciting Nest in Style podcast episode. Are we not, Teresa?
I'm totally psyched, Jamie. What a show we got planned today.
I know. This is the first of our series in drought-tolerant gardens. We're going to be, I'm going to be interviewing Deborah Lee Baldwin. But before we get to that, okay, we have a couple of announcements. Okay, we just want to say one more time, we are on iTunes. Say it, Teresa.
Yay, we're on iTunes.
You can hear us
anywhere.
That's right. Take us anywhere. You can do it while you're vacuuming, while you're doing garden chores, your commute to work, whatever. There's no excuse. You got to listen to us. I mean, depending on how long your morning routine is and how much makeup you put on a day, you can conceivably listen to a whole show before you go to work and get in your car.
That's a lot of makeup, too.
I know some people who could get that done in the amount of time we're on the air.
We're easy to find because we're searchable. So all you need to do was just go to iTunes and type in Nest in Style and you'll find us. So you don't need to worry about it, any strange URL.
Second announcement. We're going to have a new website. I don't know if you guys knew that, but I can't tell you the name of it because it's under construction right now and I don't want any peekers. Okay, no peeking until it's done. But that is actually going to be the future home of Nest in Style. Okay, it's going to be totally fabulous and we're just going to have lots of great stuff on that. And the reason why I'm telling you that, because I have had people bugging me about when I'm going to get that garden wall how-to up on the blog. Well, I have to wait. What good is a how-to without fabulous pictures?
Absolutely. Now, Jamie, back up a bit and tell all the listeners about this living wall and how you got inspired and what it looks like.
Okay. So this is where it all began. And I'll give you the short version of it. I go to all these fabulous garden shows and you see these amazing displays and succulent walls are really in right now, right? And living walls are really in. But you look at them in a garden display and you're like, how in the world can I actually do that in my own backyard? So I did a little research, which is what I do best. I spent hours on the internet and I thought, how can I build myself a living wall? First thought was when I saw the strawberries on one of the displays, I thought I need a better system of growing strawberries because you know what? Here in the Northwest, we have slugs galore, okay? And they eat my little strawberries.
I bet you do.
You know, and they're not even the big slugs or the big, you know, snails that you can see and throw them or like you like to do, Teresa, step on them and be all cruel like that. They're the little tiny babies, and they eat the strawberries, and I go to pick them, and there's, like, holes everywhere. So I built a wall.
Can I just say, listeners, that I am not cruel to snails, but after living in California and seeing them destroy your incredible garden after you think they're cute at first, and then they eat everything. So
yeah,
I just wanted to clarify that.
I never thought they were cute, but they have to be
I was a misguided East Coast person. What can I say?
Okay. So may I finish?
Yes, you may, please.
So I came up with my own little design with the help of some other people's designs. And I made this about like 4 by 8 inch wide. So 4 feet wide by 4 feet tall and about 8 inches wide. Okay. I filled it with dirt. And I planted some stuff in there, like lettuces on the backside, which got a lot less sun. And then on the front side, I put more flowers. I even planted calendula and some primrose and, I don't know, some other flower stuff and strawberries. Okay.
So when you were planting the calendula, were they coming out the side? Were they growing actually out the side? You know, they have a long stem.
Yes.
Or are they growing up toward the sun?
Well, you know what's funny, Teresa? Is that they grow out a little and then they grow up. Right now, they're a little out of control. They look like dreadlocks growing out of my container right now. They're very lush. I did not realize they were so lush. It's a good thing, right? I just kind of put them in the wrong spot, you know? And when I've had the pictures up, you'll see. But the flowers are going straight up. And that's the other thing with the lettuces. I was a little disappointed. And granted, I know lettuces need a lot of water, and you know, I probably didn't water it as much as I should have. Okay, I'm still harvesting a lot of lettuce, but some things you need to be aware of. This thing is not slug proof. Okay, I found a snail all the way up at the top of this thing, of my wall.
Jamie, snails can grow, I mean, they can go anywhere. Those things are tough.
I know, they're so annoying.
Oh, okay? They can like go great distances. They look like they're going slowly, but it's amazing what they travel. I'm not surprised at all.
Yeah, you know, I think they're doing better than if I had them planted in the ground. I don't have any strawberry, you know, berry fruit yet, so I don't know how that is doing. But another thing also is with the lettuces, if you grow like a romaine kind, that's a little tough because some of the leaves grow like completely straight up. And then the backs of the lettuces are in direct contact with the wall. And when that happens, there's not a lot of air circulation going on and they tend to rot more. So you have more rotting leaves than if you had them planted in the ground. Other varieties to think about are the smaller head, you know, like the butter lettuces and stuff. Those are doing really well, actually. So, you know,
oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I'm just interested in what you said about the lettuces because I tend to have a lot of really good luck with lettuces in the ground. And this particular spring has been very moist and cooler, so the lettuces have done better for longer. But I find that the romaines actually tend to really maintain their shape and they're very durable, and this one that I'm growing for Rellenschluss is actually really good in both heat and when it gets cooler. But the butter lettuces sometimes don't have as much, their leaves are more fragile, so they tend to bruise a lot more easily and so on. And you can, you know, that's a nice thing about lettuces, even if you don't have a lot of space. I have a number of containers ranging in different sizes, and I just sprinkled different mixes in there, from butter lettuces to like spicy Asian greens. So you have the little tatsoi and the different kinds of kale and different different greens rather than just the regular lettuces, which is so nutritious. So you don't need a lot of room to grow lettuces. And then you can also grow them in rows like I've done with my romaines and my red leaf lettuces and things. But yeah, that's what I love about it.
That's right. I love them as border plants. I have like a little mishmash or, you know, ornamental flowers and herbs and stuff like that. And then I just kind of tuck lettuces wherever they can fit and, you know, obviously get a lot of sun. Now, I don't know about you, but, you know, you can grow lettuces, obviously, later in the season, you know, if it's a little too late. But here's the thing. If you can shade it from that hot summer sun, I've actually done quite well growing lettuces all through the summer.
Well, see, I think that's what helps when you have them in a container. You can move the container to a shady spot and make sure they get plenty of water. And then also what you can do is you can grow lettuces and those greens in the fall, too. They like the cooler weather. So you can just mark back from when your frost date is going to start. And don't forget that a lot of these lettuces can tolerate, you know, mild frost. So that means you can really get some, and some of these lettuces and greens are ready in like 40 to 45 days, 50 days.
I know, that's perfect.
It is really great. And they're so beautiful. There's nothing, I have to admit, there's been a couple of times I've brought in lettuce and these unusual radishes I'm growing from the garden in all the different colors and shapes. And I had to photograph it before I could eat dinner because I was like, oh my God, this is so beautiful. So I'm going to be doing a post on all different lettuces because I just got so inspired by the taste and the beauty of these leaves.
Okay, so finally, one other person who likes to take pictures of their food. Okay, I don't see anything wrong with it, do you? Because it really is, you're eating art in a way.
You know, I just think it's wonderful when Mother Nature inspires you like that, don't you?
Well, yeah, in a lot of the heirloom varieties and even some of the hybrid varieties, they're so colorful. And when you go to harvest it and put it in a little nice little bowl, I mean, it's really pretty. It's like a little bouquet of food. But see, I have friends. And you, if you're listening to this, you know who you are. They make fun of me when I post pictures on Facebook of my food. Don't you think that's rude?
Well, I don't want to get in between you and your friends, but I did want to say that I think that it's wonderful when you can get really inspired by what you're growing. For example, I just planted a lot of squashes, different kinds of squashes. And one of the ones I'm really looking forward to, I've got the white scallop squashes, which are a very old variety, one of the oldest types of squashes I read. And I also have the golden scallops, but I'm growing this one that I thought was really interesting. It's a it's kind of a bluish cream, big old squash. And it's called a Lebanese white bush marrow. It's very rare, and it's kind of oblong, and apparently it's easy to grow. I mean, it ripens quite quickly, you know, in less than 2 months. And you can bake it or fry it, and it's supposed to just really maintain its texture really well. And I'm also growing those little round ones, the little round squashes that are kind of like eight balls, you know, you can use for stuffing. So I'm probably going to have way too many squashes in a couple months from now, and we'll be asking people for recipes. But there you go.
There you go. Well, if I was your neighbor, we could have a squash fest.
That's right. That's right.
Anyway.
So tell me about your guests. You've got Deborah Lee Baldwin, who is certainly one of the most well-known succulent experts right now, and her book is just selling phenomenally. And I'm just really excited to hear what she has to say about growing succulents, because they're such beautiful plants.
I can't tell you how much fun I had interviewing Deborah Lee Baldwin in person at the Northwest Flower and Garden Show back in February. So, I mean, she's kind of waited a long time for this interview to be on the Nest and Style podcast.
Well, it seems like after all that time, the least we could do is put her interview on the show, don't you?
I think so. So without further ado, here's Deborah Lee Baldwin. I am sitting here with the lovely Deborah Lee Baldwin, who is the author of a new book called Succulent Container Gardens. And this is a second book. What was the name of your first book?
Well, my first book was Designing with Succulents. It came out in 2007 from Timber Press.
That's right. And so that was more of using succulents in the landscape, and this is more container gardening, which I love, because living up here in the Northwest, it is really hard to have succulents in landscape, and containers are a great way to have that bold structural element in our gardens, but not have to worry about them dying over the winter. Is that right?
Yeah, and you know, it's funny, that's exactly how the book came about, because when Designing with Succulents came out, Timber Press booked me. My first venue that I spoke at was the Portland Yard, Garden, and Patio Show, and just between you and me, I was thinking, did they read my book? Do they understand that they can't grow these plants there?
Right. Other than Semperiums?
Yeah, exactly. So, and I had just finished Toastmasters, and I wasn't really, you know, confident about speaking to an auditorium full of people. And here I was going up to Portland. So anyway, I thought, okay, I've got to make this relevant to the Pacific Northwest. Well, I do have a chapter in Designing with Succulents about growing succulents in containers, and another chapter about growing them in cold climates. And so that was what I focused on. And so even then, 3 years ago, I realized the need for a book on growing succulents in containers, succulent container gardens, because anyone, anywhere can grow these wonderful architectural, geometric, cool plants in a container, because containers can be moved indoors or under shelter when the weather turns inclement. So that's sort of how the whole thing got started.
Great. And thank goodness for people like you, because growing water-tolerant plants can be really difficult in this, you know, the colder climates where it's raining all the time.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
And so it's nice to have a little piece of the desert up here in the Northwest. So, and if you don't mind, can you just tell some listeners who maybe are not used to growing succulents in this area why they're such a great plant, number one, for containers and water-wise gardens?
Well, succulents are probably the closest thing to plastic in the plant world. They're very low maintenance. They're very drought tolerant. By definition, succulents are plants that withstand periods of drought by storing water in fleshy leaves and stems. Well, they're dry climate plants. They're used to a very harsh habitat. And so when you neglect them, they're fine. They don't care. These are plants that don't miss you when you're away. You know, I no longer give someone a key to come into my house to water my potted plants when I'm on vacation or on a business trip, because I converted all my potted plants to succulents. And they'll go for, two, sometimes 3 weeks without water, depending on the time of year and if it's the growth season. But, you know, even if they go completely dry, which I don't recommend because they'll look lusher and prettier if you keep the soil about as moist as a wrung-out sponge, but even if they go completely dry, they will feed off the moisture and the nutrients in their leaves. And when you look down at it, you think, oh my gosh, I forgot to water that. It's been 4 weeks. Well, yeah, the leaves are a little shriveled, you know, but then they'll plump up again when you water them.
This seems like the perfect plant for many people these days. I mean, we're multitaskers.
Exactly.
And we like to travel. And so we don't want to have to be tied to our homes, you know, because of our plants, you know, things that we take care of and invest a lot of money in. So succulents are a great idea for busy people who like to travel.
And who like to garden.
That's right. That's a great point. So what advice would you give for people who are just starting out in designing succulent containers? You know, should they maybe stick to one species of plants and put it in a really cool pot maybe they find at a secondhand store? Or is it okay to start with a dependable combination of succulents? What would you recommend?
Don't be intimidated by these plants.
Okay.
Just because they come from a whole different part of the country, maybe you haven't grown them before, don't treat them with kid gloves. Be mean to your succulents. They like neglect. You know, it's okay. They're going to be all right unless you're too nice to them, unless you overwater them. Because you have to remember, with plants that have these fat, plump, juicy leaves, their roots are not set up to handle too much water, and they'll rot out on you. But that's the only thing you really have to worry about.
There's so many choices.
There are.
With succulent. Is there one succulent that you think is no fail? I mean, these kind of seem like they're really easy plants to take care of.
Well, kind of depends. Depends on the part of the country that you're in.
Okay.
Here in the Pacific Northwest, sempervivums and sedums will do really well for you.
Right.
And a lot of those they'll tolerate temperatures well below freezing. The word sempervivum means ever living. And the common name, house leek, comes from the fact that they grow on rooftops in England.
So, and that's why we find them on so many rooftop gardens.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Green roofs. Exactly. They're the great green roof plant. But if you were to ask the same question of me in, say, the Southwest, what is a no-fail plant? You know, what can you just, I mean, anybody can grow? Well, that's a whole different climate.
That's
and
true.
So
that's
down
a good
there,
point.
It would be like agave americana, which will eat your garden if you let it, because it pups prolifically and it gets as big as a Volkswagen. Or maybe jade plant, which is a greenhouse plant in colder climates, and yet is the only surviving plant in neglected gardens in the Southwest.
Oh, wow.
So, but the cool thing about succulents is that there are more genera and species available now to the home gardener than ever before. I mean, calanchoes were not even on the nursery radar back in the middle of the 20th century. And now, I mean, these are plants native to the Canary Islands, and now we're seeing them become more and more available, and they're gorgeous.
Now, so do you attribute that to people just wanting water-wise gardens? I don't know why I have such a hard time saying that. Water-wise gardens. Is that why they're becoming so popular now and so much more available, or is it?
Definitely in the Southwest. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the things that launched Designing with Succulents it's in its fourth printing right now. It's just been translated into French. I mean, it's a real success story. And I think one of the reasons is the ongoing drought in Southern California, because everybody is looking for plants that don't require a lot of water. They're tearing out their lawns. And these are plants that are lush and lovely without a lot of water. And, you know, one of the biggest misconceptions that people have is that a succulent landscape is a dry desert landscape.
Well,
all cacti are succulents. But Designing with Succulents is all about the lush and lovely, softer-leaved plants.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, definitely the drought has really propelled the interest in succulents. But there are a lot of other reasons, too. I mean, a drought is not a sexy reason to grow a plant. You know?
You're right, yes.
But I think people just love looking at them. Gardeners have gotten more sophisticated. They appreciate foliage over flowers, although succulents have some of the most spectacular flowers of any plants. It's the shapes, it's the geometry. you know, they're just cool plants to collect, to look at, to combine in containers, to have in your garden. Even sempervivums will, you know, grow them in a strawberry jar and watch them ooze out of the openings and hug the side of the jar. It's just so textural. You have to reach out and touch them.
Yeah. Listeners, I wish you can watch Deborah talk about this right now, because I love the passion in your facial expressions when you talk about these succulents, and your book really reflects that.
Oh,
I mean,
it's
not just the book about, oh, some cacti and, you know, a jade plant and aloe vera. You have wonderful color inspiration, design ideas. You have to take a look at this book. It's the best succulent book I've seen, where not only are you combining design ideas, inspiration, but really how to grow these plants and how to be successful with them.
Yeah, my goal is to help people enhance their outdoor living spaces, to add beauty to their lives, and to introduce them to really cool plants that they'll enjoy growing.
That's great. What would you tell people is the most important chapter in your book? Where should people start?
Well, I think most people, when they look at any illustrated book, tend to flip through the pages, and they'll see images that really capture them. And I think when you're doing that with this book, or really any book, you want to stop and say, okay, what is that about that picture that really resonates with me? That I want to recreate that in my own garden. And if you're doing that with my book, yeah, you know, stop and read the caption. And if you think, okay, that's doable, great. You know, that's a launching point for your own creativity. But if you think, well, that's a little bit beyond me, then you probably want to read the text that goes with that photo and caption. So that's a place to start if you're a chapter jumper. But if the whole idea of growing succulents is just really foreign to you, well, then, you know, start with the beginning.
Right.
Or if you're fairly, you know, comfortable with succulents, but you have some questions, especially about cultivation, well, then go to that chapter and find out. I mean, it's really simple. I mean, I can sum up cultivation with succulents in one or two sentences. It's basically, you know, give them fast-draining, porous soil, lots of sunlight and air circulation, especially during the growth period of the spring and summer. Let them go dormant in winter, and don't overwater them. You know,
Seems simple enough.
But I have a whole chapter on care and cultivation, because just as with any kind of plant, each and every species and cultivar has a slightly different requirement for looking its absolute best. And if you want to take cuttings and propagate them and have them grow lush and lovely for you, that's the chapter to go to.
Those are all really good ways of, I think, just jumping into something that you're interested in without feeling overwhelmed or feeling like you have to commit to reading a book from front to back. So thank you. Those are very good tips.
Thank you.
Now let's talk about what people do wrong, so we can learn from their mistakes.
Sure.
What would you say the top three things are that make it so people are not successful with succulents? And what can they do to change that and be more successful?
Well, I can speak from personal experience.
And that's where we all
learn from the ones I killed.
Let's talk about what you killed.
Well, you know, a rule of thumb is the fatter and fleshier the succulent, the less water it needs, which makes sense because they're water storage plants. So I think about, oh, how I fell in love with a Euphorbia obesa. And I think one of the things that attracted me to it was its name, obesa. I mean, how can you resist that as a species name? And they're these little ping pong ball plants that are striped like a herringbone.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, they're really neat to look at. And so I brought home a Euphorbia obesa, and I had it on a pot on my deck. And it was doing great. It, you know, they don't like too much sunlight. They'll get sunburned. And it was, I had all that covered. And I left it out in the rain. We had the rainy season. And I thought, well, the plant should be used to that. It has rainy seasons where it's, you know, in its own habitat.
Right.
And I looked at it. It looked fine. I didn't really think about it. I mean, I don't grow plants that I have to be pampered. And then one day I looked at it, and it had turned to mush just overnight.
Oh, it had soaked up way too much.
Yeah, it had, and its roots had rotted. And that's what will happen is once the roots rot, you may not even know it until the plant just, you know, turns to ooze. So I would say in general that I personally have found cactus harder to grow than the softer leaved succulents, because the softer leaved succulents will tolerate irregular water, maybe too much water. But you overwater a cactus and it collapses.
That's interesting because I didn't know that. But cactuses used to be everywhere. That kind of used to like be the succulent that people, you know, signified the class with.
Yeah.
So that's interesting.
Well, yeah, and I try not to water my cactus, but then I think, well, it's got to get some water. I mean, you know, it's sort of like the plant isn't talking to me.
Right.
It's not communicating with me like a lot of the plants do. You know, even the perennials I grow in my garden, I mean, you look at it, there's common sense about when you prune them back and all that.
Right, right.
So I do. I confess I have a little bit harder time with cactus. Well, other mistakes, you know, interestingly enough, if you're growing a topiary or a wreath that's like a wireframe stuffed with moss and planted with cuttings, don't fertilize it because you don't want it to grow. But give it regular light so it's not leaning in one direction.
Okay.
You know. Let's see, other mistakes. Well, not understanding the cultivation requirements of certain succulents such as Haworthias. These are the ultimate windowsill plant. They're very happy in low light conditions. They're tight rosettes with pointed leaves for the most part. And they do really well indoors. They're highly collectible. They're collectible all over the world. The Japanese are mad for them. But if you aren't careful and you give a Haworthia too much sunlight, it will sunburn. And yeah, and I've brought them home from a nursery and put them out in my nursery area, which is covered. And once they're sunburned, there's no healing from. I mean, the plant's still alive, but it's unsightly.
Okay, so what I gather of how to be successful with succulents is know that you don't need to water them as much as, I mean, the number one killer of houseplants is overwatering. So
you
really got to be careful with the succulents. I mean, these truly are like leave me alone plants.
Yeah, let the soil go almost dry between lines.
Almost dry. And then, so this class, I mean, they're water-wise plants, but they do have their individual needs as far as sunlight exposure and whatnot. So that's very good to know.
Yeah.
So thank you very much, Deborah. Well, it was really nice talking to you.
My pleasure.
Wow, that was a really great interview with Deborah, Jamie. I mean, what I really like about what she had to say was that these plants really are plants that love to be neglected. When I lived in California, succulents were, of course, growing everywhere. And they just are, they're just huge. It's so huge and in their sculptural shapes. And the flowers are just an added treat, really.
Well, yeah. And I think that when Deborah said that people's tastes are evolving, you know, and maturing, people are starting to realize the texture combinations that can be done and created with succulents. You know, the texture combinations that you see in Deborah's book are the most amazing. I mean, it's not just one plant, which I think so many people who are used to looking at succulents in their native habitat is they see just the one plant. But her book really opens your mind to the many possibilities that you can create something really lush. I mean, really lush looking.
Absolutely. I think that you're right. I think some people think that succulents are cacti. And so they think they're all sharp and pointy. Some of these have tremendously soft leaves. And like I mentioned, I think the flower is an added feature. It's like a special perk. And some of those flowers are so dramatic. But it's really the foliage itself that is so sophisticated. And it works so well in so many different environments. And I think you're right. Deborah is really helping people to open their eyes about this plant and realize that no matter what climate you live in, you can grow succulents in containers and enjoy their beauty.
That's
so
exactly
thanks so
right.
much for doing that.
You are welcome. All right, so I'm so excited. We started off with Deborah, and we have two other experts in this drought-tolerant series that we're doing. So tell us more about it.
Well, we are going to move from succulents to how do you build an English-style garden in the middle of a high desert environment with no trees? That is going to be the topic of our next conversation with Marianne Newcomer, who has worked on a special project with the Idaho Botanical Garden. And it's really fascinating what they've been able to create. And I think it will be very inspiring for people to hear. This third interview in our series is going to be with Yvette Solaire, who you may know on Twitter as the Germanatrix. And she's going to talk to us, believe it or not, on how to save water in ornamental and edible gardens. So anybody who knows Yvette knows that she has a wonderful personality that's just bubbling with enthusiasm, and that's going to be a tremendous interview, too. I'm really looking forward to both of them.
I am, too. I cannot wait to hear what you guys had to talk about. So very exciting.
Exactly. And we have a lot more interviews coming up, so just keep coming back. And in the meantime, don't forget to look for us on iTunes.
And Twitter. And Facebook, folks. There you go. And if you have any ideas that you'd like to see on future shows, hey, drop us a line. Twitter, Facebook, or leave a comment on our blog, which for now, it's www.nestinstyle.wordpress.com. But remember, that's changing, and we'll let you know.
And in the meantime, to paraphrase my co-host, go grow something.